Northern Wisconsin is known for having rich forest land, but a new study from the UW finds that not all of that forest is the same. Researchers looked into several forests on Native American land and compared them to the areas right next door. They found that tribal forests often had older trees, more plant diversity, and more biomass. The findings could help inform future decisions about managing forest land and wildlife. Dan Waller is a professor of botany and environmental studies at UW-Madison. He took the lead on the study. He's here with us in the studio. Don, welcome to Central Time.
Happy to be here.
Well, you don't often, when you have forests, get to go out and do big experiments where we're going to have this condition in this group of forests, this condition in another. This kind of experiment just kind of falls into your lap in some ways, right?
It was a natural experiment, as we call them, of a kind that ecologists treasure. It's very hard. You can't do experiments at landscape scale for many decades, but if you can find lands that have been managed differently and compare what the outcomes are on those lands, you've got an experiment.
So you go out into these Native American, these tribal managed lands, forests in particular, compare and contrast with other forest land. What are you hoping to find out?
In this case, we wanted to see if a history of management by the Native Americans here in the upper Midwest resulted in significantly different ecological outcomes and things we could measure on the ground.
And big picture, the answer to that is yes, it sounds like.
Yes. We looked at five or six different things. The first thing we looked at was just forest cover and composition. That was the same. On and off the reservations, overall species of trees present and so on. But in every other metric we looked at, we found a difference.
Yeah, let's look at some of those things where you found significant differences. One of them, I understand, is biodiversity. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. We were fortunate here in Wisconsin to have good baseline data from the 1950s. John Curtis and his students had surveyed sites in a couple of the Ojibwe reservations. And when we went back to those, we were surprised to find that they had not changed in understory plant diversity at all. If anything, they'd slightly gained. And that's a contrast to the rest of our northern Wisconsin sites, where we'd lost on average about 18% of our plant diversity, and three state parks in northern Wisconsin that had lost, ironically, more than half their plant diversity over the last 50 years.
What were some of the other big differences you found between the tribal forests and the rest?
Well, especially on the Menominee Reservation, you can see this from space. The density and cover of forests has been sustained over more than a century. They have mature forests. They have bigger trees and older trees than adjacent lands.
You saw this. You can see this from satellite images.
Especially along the western boundary. They used to use the sharpness of that boundary along the county line actually to focus satellite lenses. Yeah.
Now, I assume a lot of your research wasn't satellite-based. You're going into the forests
exactly.
For these things.
Yeah, we had the opportunity to spend many years. The paper actually results from three or four different studies we did over a period of 20 years. But we decided to look at these differences between the Indian and non-Indian lands in particular.
What are some of the causes of these differences?
You know, we came back to the same hypothesis pretty repeatedly. We see better tree regeneration in the Indian reservations. We see better plant diversity. We see fewer invasive weeds and more tree biomass. Eventually, we came back to white-tailed deer. Browsing by white-tailed deer seems to be curtailing both understory plant diversity and especially the regeneration of trees.
Talking to botany professor Don Waller about, he's with UW-Madison, talking about a study he led comparing tribal forests with other forests around Wisconsin. Saw some pretty big differences, a lot of better things in many ways in the tribal forests. The deer, the browsing by the deer. It seems like a small thing. Watch one deer, it's going around eating, not a big deal. Why can white-tailed deer make so much difference to things like biodiversity, invasive species, the other qualities you were talking about?
White-tailed deer right now in the upper Midwest are acting like a keystone herbivore. They're affecting a lot of different species and a lot of different processes. White-tailed deer densities are at a high over from as far as we know from ever. They've reached levels in many parts of the northern part of the state that we've never seen before. The levels we found on the Indian reservations were 2 to 3 times lower in general. These are the bigger Ojibwe and the Menominee Reservation. And so we think that's responsible for a lot of these differences. There are also differences, of course, in forest management, and in particular in cultural philosophy, how the Indians approach wildlife and how they approach forests compared to typically how we tend to manage outside the reservations.
So are there different deer policies on these tribal lands as compared to, say, state herd management? Or is it a secondary effect of how forests are managed that leads there to be more deer here, fewer deer there?
Excellent question, and we're not completely sure, but we think it's both. We think that is the fact that hunters are often calling for very high deer densities outside the Indian reservations, and we're limited to a 9-day gun season here in Wisconsin, whereas on the Indian reservations, season is longer. The take can be larger. Enforcement is by tribal authorities. Very different policies and a very different cultural approach to what deer are and what it means to hunt deer.
Are there lessons here that you think could apply, lessons in deer herd management on tribal land that could be useful in other forests around the state?
Absolutely. The big shock for me in terms of these results was to see how poorly many tree species are regenerating outside the Indian reservations, and yet how well they're regenerating inside the reservations. This means the whole composition and structure of our forests looking into the future is changing. Mostly as a result of high deer densities. In the Ojibwe culture, for example, it's considered irreverent not to shoot a deer that presents itself to the hunter. It doesn't matter if it's a small deer or a female deer. Many hunters outside the reservations want that buck with a big rack of antlers. That's a very different philosophy to hunting.
This would be, if these ideas were put into effect off of tribal land, I'm sure you know, this would be controversial. There's a hunting lobby that wants a higher deer density for better hunting during that season. Is this something that would be politically a hard sell?
It's unfortunate, but game and deer management in particular have become very political. This is not what Aldo Leopold, of course, wanted. That's why he helped set up the Conservation Congress and an independent DNR and so forth. I don't think it's all hunters. I'm a hunter myself, by the way. I both bow hunt and gun hunt deer. But I think there are some hunters that are very vociferous, that are very focused on a narrow kind of hunting. They really want a record large buck with a good rack of antlers, something they can mount on the wall. It's kind of a tradition of sport hunting. It's not the kind of subsistence hunting that some other hunters do, including most of the Indians.
One more point I'd ask you the question, is it direct deer management or is it the way the forest is managed that leads to more deer? Part of your study looked at kind of that peripheral land, clearings around forests as being a great place for deer, and it sounds like there's more of that off of the tribal lands, less of it on. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. The reservations in general have fewer roads, fewer openings, fewer houses, and not as much human disturbance. Deer thrive in edge habitats. They thrive in the younger forests, especially aspen forests, that tend to dominate the industrial private forest lands and many of the county and state and even national forests in Wisconsin.
One person commented on a news write-up about this, hey, maybe this is a sign we need more wolves around Wisconsin to keep the deer herd down. Is that another piece of the ecological puzzle that factors in here?
I think it is. The Ojibwe, for example, consider the wolf a brother. They would never shoot a wolf. And so it was upsetting to those cultures to see wolves being hunted and trapped when that was allowed here in Wisconsin, and many are still pushing for that right now. It's certainly true that wolves change deer behavior as well as possibly bringing down their population densities. So where wolves are tolerated, deer tend to have less impact on forests.
Let's talk about this as an ecological story here. Too many deer has this big impact on biodiversity, on the growth of older trees, on the canopy of forests. One piece of the puzzle has this huge ripple effect on the whole rest of the forest.
It is. As I said, deer acting like a keystone herbivore to fundamentally change the structure and composition of Wisconsin forest right now. We also know that high deer densities are associated with high densities of deer ticks, which transmit Lyme disease and other diseases. We know high deer densities are associated with a lot of collisions on the highways, more agriculture damage and forestry damage. So I think we need to reconsider deer management in Wisconsin. The lesson here from this study and from what's going on in the Indian reservations is that we could learn a lot from the Indians about how to manage forests in balance with their deer populations.
Is it too late? Are we at a point where the off-reservation lands are too far gone? Even if we made changes now, they can't come back to the same state as tribal lands.
I don't think so. I tend to be an optimist, but we also have a situation where there's been severe browsing for a period of decades, so it would take a long time for both the understory and the tree species composition, the regeneration, to get back to something closer to what the Indians already have.
You've gotten some media attention from the study. Have you gotten attention from policymakers, conservation people, others who have a stake here who might want to try to implement changes?
I work closely with the Natural Areas Preservation Council here in Wisconsin, DNR, and Forest Service employees. I think there is a good dialogue that's beginning to take place, partly as a result of this paper, partly as a result of their own work, seeing the impacts the deer are having.
What's the next part of the story that you would want to find out, that you want to come up with a study to figure out what happens next?
The question you asked before was, is it too late? The question I'd like to answer is, how long does it take a degraded forest to bounce back, to regain species that it's lost? It probably depends on context. But here again, we have the Indian reservations here in Wisconsin. I think they could be nuclei for expansion of regenerated, restored forests.
So there could be something like a pilot program, take X amount of land, maybe adjacent to tribal land, try similar management practices, see what happens in 10 years?
Why not? Why not do a few large-scale experiments and really see how far we can get with them?
We'll leave it there. Don, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
A pleasure. Thank you.
That's Don Waller, professor of botany and environmental studies at UW-Madison. He was here to talk about a study he led that found plant life in tribal forests in Wisconsin to be more diverse and sustainable than on the non-tribal forests that surround them.